Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, I'm casting pod from my front office today, and the city has sent out a crew of men with trucks and machinery and saws, so I apologize if this is a particularly noisy episode of the pod from my end.
Well, once the Los Angeles Sewer and Water Department got word that Benjamin R. Harrison was moving to town, they had to do quite a bit of sewer line enlargement in and around your property. So it's quite understandable to me that they'd want to take that thing out to a roughly 2 to 3 foot diameter.
This is a real killing two birds with one stone opportunity for them, because not only do they get to do some retrofitting on the existing plumbing to make sure it can accommodate what I'm putting into it, they can also, you know, throw a little shade my way, make sure I still know who's boss, you know?
They're just looking at you from the street while they do their work.
I've made so much uncomfortable eye contact with a guy pulling on the ripcord that starts the saw with the 4 foot diameter rotary blade.
A lot of cities would find it weird to install an in-sink aerator style garbage disposal downpipe of your toilets, but I mean, I guess when you're you, that's standard issue, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to drop your keys down the toilet, let me tell you. You don't want to reach in after them.
No, you definitely don't.
You're going to come back with a stump.
Adam, do you want to talk about some Deep Spaces 9 with me?
let's pivot from toilet humor to humor of a different stripe, I suppose, in talking about Deep Space 9 Season 1 Episode 8, The Passenger.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
The continuing story about Dr. Bashir's pompous assholery. Question I have for you is there any reason to like him right now?
Fate has granted me a gift, Major. A gift to be a healer.
We can assume that he gets better. He's supposed to get better. He's a beloved character. But if you're watching this for the first time, not a lot to like here. I'm wondering at what point you may assume he is irredeemable.
I mean, he's been pervy. He's been boorish. And now he's being not just braggy, but smarmy braggy.
You know what? I recently had to look for a doctor, a new doctor. And if while I was auditioning them, my doctor at any point just told me a doctor story about how great his research practices were, I would totally tell him to get lost. I want a doctor who doesn't brag.
If I read a Yelp review of a doctor talking about that kind of situation, I wouldn't even try the place out.
I don't want Bashir's finger anywhere near my asshole. If he's just going to brag about it later.
Wait a second. How old are you? I don't think I don't think they need to do that yet, Adam. I think you may have picked wrong.
When you have the problems that I have been, that timeline is moved quite a bit up.
Well, they are in a runabout coming back from a thing, and they receive a distress call. And by they, I mean Dr. Bashir and Major Kira.
This is the Federation ship Rio Grande. We're on our way.
I love that there's such a thing as a priority one distress signal.
Yeah.
As if, if you're in trouble, you could send a distress signal. Or you could elevate that somehow.
Yeah. It's the it's that little, double exclamation point option that, only assholes sending business emails use.
It's like sending a page with 911 at the end of the phone number.
They find a freighter, and it's from an alien species called the Kalibut, and there's an unconscious woman aboard. There's like fires burning all the air on the ship up. Major Kira goes off to see if she can't get life support back online,
while also getting a canister vacuum cleaner style fire extinguisher.
Yeah,
I love this.
Yeah, it's like a fire extinguisher, but it still shoots a ray because this is the future. The doctor focuses on Tai Kajada, who is a security police officer kind of person, and he's like, "Is there anybody else aboard?" And she's like, "No, everybody else is dead. Just get me out of here." And he's like, "Well, I'm picking up somebody else on my tricorder, so I'm going to try and save him." And she's like, "Seriously, dude, like, don't even bother. like this, I'm the priority one distress. That is like a priority nothing distress. Don't let it move the needle." And he's like, "Hey, listen, I'm a doctor, and I like to think of myself as being a pretty good doctor, so I'm going to go save a life right now."
The Hippocratic Oath doesn't contain an asterisk about, like, leaving a guy behind a bulkhead on an about-to-explode spaceship.
Yeah.
That would be doing harm.
It's an interesting, like, it's an interesting scenario to throw a Starfleet into, is like, the ship is going to explode. There are potentially prisoners that can't be saved and security guards that can, you know? Like, Starfleets are so squeaky clean morally that is like an almost impossible decision.
It's the Pee-wee in the Pet Shop decision.
Sure.
He's got to save the snakes.
Exactly. And there's like one ferry that's full of snakes, and then the other ferry that's full of other animals, but they can both blow each other up. I'm getting my movies confused. Is that Pee-wee in the Pet Shop?
Pee-wee's Big Adventure? Is the movie I was referring to?
Oh, no, I was thinking of Pee-wee's Dark Knight.
Oh, jeez. The crossover that Gotham didn't ask for, but it's the one it deserves. No one can take that kind of crossover, Ben.
These people just showed you a city that can come together and save the snakes.
This is the episode of Greatest Gen that dropped acid.
I didn't realize that was in our random number generator. That would be really the thing to do, right? Is like make a wheel of destiny where one of the tiles is do the show drunk, but there are wedges for all of the other shows.
I love to keep ourselves interested. We're just throwing landmines in our way.
How would we even get acid? I don't know how to do that. I'm not in college. I don't know any chemistry majors.
You know what would be a great concept for a podcast is Ben and Adam try to buy drugs. How would you do it? It's like 45 minutes of us speculating, like, on what the plan might be, and the last 15 minutes is us being arrested and briefly imprisoned.
Let them go. They're barely a risk to themselves, much less others. So this prisoner is Rao Vantika, and while Bashir is attempting to stabilize him, Vantika grabs Bashir by the neck and hisses,
"Make me live."
Bashir's like, "Friend, I was going to do that anyway. I'm a doctor. And a great one. If you're lucky enough to survive this, I'll regale you with my stories."
When you're recovering in sickbay, you won't have anywhere to go, so I guess that would be a great time for me to just tell you about what a great doctor I am. I'm looking forward to it as much as I'm sure you are.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my little state.
Oh, no.
I don't use the bucket.
after the show open, we come to find out that these people are known as the Kobliad, which is a race of aliens that has the loaf equivalent of the mid-90s split down the middle hair part. It's like they just comb that loaf right up into it.
Because we split the top, add butter, and let it bake right in.
Everyone had this haircut in the mid-90s.
I sure did.
Yeah, you and me both.
I was looking at like old driver licenses, and I think my learner's permit, I had that haircut.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
You get yourself one of those parted down the middle haircuts and a sweater that's two sizes too big. That's Adam in the mid-90s right there.
Oh, man. You really paint a picture. I probably had some simple skateboarding shoes and some flannel shirts, though I didn't listen to grunge rock and didn't skateboard.
I lived in Seattle in the 90s, and instead of adopting the plaid shirt tied around my waist and the Doc Martens, I embraced the Jerry Seinfeld from first run Seinfeld episodes way of dressing.
Oh, sure.
Like, you wanna get some light colored jeans and an Oxford shirt that you tuck in.
Uh-huh.
That's what you want right there.
Yeah, an Oxford shirt that is cut for a man much heavier than you, so it really blouses out quite a bit.
I have no idea why I wasn't popular, Ben.
Did you go for a nice big white cross-training shoe?
Oh, yeah. You got to get the cross-training shoe, and you also need the brown braided leather belt.
Oh, man. What a time to be alive. The 90s.
It wasn't my fault, was it?
No, it was the 90s' fault.
All right.
The 90s... ravaged us all in many ways. I feel like Rayo Vantica and Ty Kajada had kind of a Hannibal Lecter, Clary Starling type relationship.
Silence of the land.
Yeah.
Vantica is a monster, and she is very sanguine about like his value to society. She is much more interested in nipping the Vantica problem in the bud than in proceeding with any kind of due process. But that's only because she has like stared into the abyss of what he is and what he represents. And I thought that this actress did a nice job of conveying that. Like, we don't really get any details about what Vantica does, you know. But
well, that's why I would disagree with you. Like, Ty and the actress who plays her does a great job in acting out her fear of Rayo. But if we're supposed to believe that Rayo is the Hannibal Lecter figure that we're being told, we need an example to fear him. Like, it isn't enough to trust someone we don't know about his reputation. Like, that's the part that didn't work for me. And so we are taught to fear him for the next 40 minutes without any reason at all to do it, except going on the word of someone that we don't know to be credible.
I guess I just thought the performance was good. I don't know.
She mentions that it's her life's work, basically, to chase this guy down. She's like a marshal.
I would say that they definitely made a, like, whether this was a proactive choice or a choice of incompetence, they made a choice that the only thing that we're going to let tell us how scared to be of Vantica is the way she performs her fear of him.
Hey, Ty, you know what you could do with a prisoner who's as dangerous as Hannibal Lecter? Like, you could put him in shackles or something on your ship instead of, I guess, just giving him a room to play around in.
You could put him on a furniture dolly in a right. in a straitjacket and a face mask.
That's what I'm saying. If he's strapped to a dolly, then they don't even need dialogue to solve this problem. We could just see how dangerous he is.
Yeah. I mean,
they spent all that money on pyro.
Yeah, Vantica and Lecter have their escape artistry in common. So even though they've got a cold body on a slab in the morgue, she's going around the station saying, like, keep your fucking heads on a swivel. This guy is here right now, and there have been much more daring escapes in this dude's past.
So watch out, two security people on this giant station. She's got to be so disappointed in the staffing of this place.
Yeah, she wakes up on Deep Space Nine and she's like, shit, this is exactly where he wanted to be.
Right, and he wants to be there because there's this shipment coming in, we're told. The shipment of Deridium is the main pivot point of this episode. Everyone wants this stuff. It's super valuable, super dangerous.
They should have called it MacGuffium.
Right. Rayo needs this stuff to live. Like, that's his dependency on it is more than just, like, economical. Like, he and his people need it like a drug.
Yeah, the Kobliat are a dying race, and this is the thing that stabilizes their molecules or whatever. So so the Federation is trying to ship lots of it to them, and Vantika is a heist man, basically.
We learn about this Deridium by way of a conversation that Odo has with Quark. And overhearing this conversation is a new lieutenant to the station, Lieutenant Primin. And he pulls Odo aside and he's like, what the fuck, dude? Why are you putting this Deridium shipment out on the streets like this?
Do you always get ready for an important operation by leaking word about it to the local black market?
Especially to Quark. Like, get it together, man. We're supposed to be like team security.
Primin is fresh off the freighter on Deep Space Nine, but he can already tell that Quark is not the guy you want to be mouthing off about the Deridium to. And Odo is like, hey, bub, I'll run my security operation the way I see fit. By the way, you're the most milquetoast security officer I can possibly imagine.
Who is this man of toast? And what does he want from us? What is his dark secret?
O'Brien isn't in this episode because I guess he's still back on Earth at the longest 100th birthday party ever. I mean, at this rate, Keiko's grandma's going to die during the party, right?
She's like Mr. Timmons or whatever, the guy that Loxana Troy fell in love with.
Yeah.
She's turning 100 and committing ritual suicide, and O'Brien wasn't going to miss that.
He's like, so this runs in your family, this whole suicide at a certain age thing? Maybe you could hit me to how many more years you've got left, Keiko.
So this milquetoast security guard.
Lieutenant George Primin, Starfleet Security.
Hold it! Toast Man!
Heads up to ops, and it's pretty clear when he gets up there that Sisko, it knows all about him, was expecting him. He's like, hey, man, like, I want to kick it to you in my office. So they head in there, and Officer Securitoast is like, hey, listen, I think that this constable guy you got down there is not really running a tight ship, W/R/T security. And that's kind of my specialty. I'm from Starfleet Security.
He's like, give it up for Starfleet Security, and like holds out the rock to be pounded back.
Yeah.
He sort of assumes this Starfleet fraternity idea, which sort of makes sense to me. He's like, look, man, I'm Starfleet Security. You got this Odo guy talking to Ferengi out in public about Deridium. I think you and I both know who should be running the show here. Sort of assuming that Sisko would confer this task to him, like this leadership to him.
Yeah.
Doesn't really happen that way.
I would say that rather than that, Sisko big dogs the shit out of him.
If you want my opinion.
Actually, I don't.
And basically says, hey, man, like, we're here. We're on borrowed time on this Bajoran space station. This is their turf. Maybe you don't act like such a chauvinistic shithead, and maybe you'll learn something from these people. Maybe if you fall in step, Odo will teach you a thing or two.
This scene occurs very close to a scene between Odo and Sisko, where Odo's like, fuck this, I'm out, I quit. And Sisko's like, no, man, you got to stick around. You're the guy in charge. You need to hear me say it. You're in charge. You are the A to Lieutenant Toast's B.
It's definitely a strange choice that they would be like, we're getting a lieutenant from Starfleet Security, somebody with a little status to throw around, coming out to the station. And we're not going to tell the guy who is the head of station security about it. We'll just let that other guy like introduce himself and sort of pull rank and let it be ambiguous for a little while. Like, right. I totally understand why Odo was like, fuck this.
Yeah, I think you and I have talked around this quite a bit. Like, it's all anyone wants to know in whatever job situation they're in is like, who's in charge and who reports to who. It yeah. removes so many conflicts when those relationships are made clear. And that's all Odo's asking for here.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So they find one piece of evidence lending credence to Kajada's concern, which is that Vantika had an isolinear chip in his possession that was a map of the humanoid brain.
An 8-bit map of the humanoid brain, by the way.
Yeah. So we have we cut to like a late night scene in Quark's. Like, the place is closed and they're cleaning up after the day. And Quark kicks out his Ferengi maids, I guess. And he's like up on the second level and he gets grabbed from behind and he's in like a headlock by a person claiming to be Vantika.
I was told you were dead. Almost, but not quite.
So Quark, who has arranged a business deal for Vantika, assumed that he wouldn't have to complete the deal.
Ben, at this point, the mystery was over for me because this gloved figure who gets a Quark in the headlock sounds like Alexander Siddig, like, whisper yelling. Like, they make no attempt to cover his voice up at all. Like, you listen to our show for any length of time, I think you understand how easy it is to do impressions and voices, Ben, for two ding-dongs like you and me.
I mean, I would say that that's the thing that people tune into is our excellent impressions and voices.
Why didn't they get him to push the voice boundary a little bit so that it covered it up a little better?
All right, Alexander, that was great. I think let's do another take, and this time do it as, I don't know, like do your best Cosby. You see, Mr. Quark, I need you to hire some mercenaries. We are going to do some crimes and some stealing and some thievery, and I need some bad guys with guns to do it with me. Rudy!
The Deridium comes in the caplet form. It's so easy to dissolve in the drinks.
In the show notes for this show, Ben, they mention that all of the Siddig as Vantika dialogue was looped. Because the choice that Alexander Siddig made as an actor, as far as his voice went, was like a super dumb Bela Lugosi voice. And so when they started watching the footage, they were like, oh no. Oh no, we can't do it like this.
Ugh.
And so they looped him. Like they did ADR and they totally redid all the dialogue. But that doesn't forgive why the scene sounds so much like him whispering when if... what you want to do is suspend, is keep the mystery going throughout. They could have had him do enough takes to where he sounded like a different person.
You also get a little glimpse of his face at
right,
the end of
exactly.
this scene.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not like this isn't a hot mess from a, not just from a performance standpoint, but also an editing and blocking standpoint.
Like, the episode's 40 minutes. It's okay to leave us in suspense a little while longer, guys.
Yeah. That's an interesting piece of trivia, Adam, about the Bela Lugosi voice, because I was totally befuddled by the way he does the performance a little later on.
Yeah.
So what they start to speculate on, like, Dax calls Bashir down to her science room and is like, hey, get a load of this. I've got some evidence that Vantika has done a bunch of research into synaptic pattern displacement, which it is revealed in the scene is roughly equivalent to a mind meld. And I thought it was kind of cool to like a mind meld is a very specific thing in this universe. And the idea that there's like a scientific word for it and a sort of independent scientific understanding of what it is, I thought was a really nice piece of dimensionalizing the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, like if it's possible for some people, for one race, it may be possible for others. Like the science, the quote-unquote science doesn't just end there. Yeah, that's like, cool.
Yeah, they're like, nobody's ever been able to make this work. And they're like, well, Vantika was a genius, and maybe he figured something out.
But, you know, in a scene where we are given the depiction of smart science people doing smart science, this episode suffers from that plague of smart people written to be dumb, because everyone who was on the ship should be suspected of harboring Vantika's thoughts.
Right.
And they never postulate that. Like, they're like, where could he be? Who could he be whose brain could he be stowing away on, when there were like two people on that ship? Like, it's not like they would have had to do a hard target search of every person on the station. Like, it could only be three people.
But they focus on it being Kajata is the suspect. So she's sort of taken off the beat, and Odo is like, I thought this was some fun trade craft. Odo's like, don't tell her that she's being taken out of the operation. Like,
yeah.
If she finds out, she can come to me, and I'll tell her. and so she kind of like takes it upon herself to just keep investigating this thing. And she is in Quark's bar, like creeping around in the shadows while Quark is finalizing the deal with the mercenaries he's hired. And she gets pushed, or perhaps falls off of the third floor balcony.
Now, when you're installing railings at a workplace, you want to make sure to prescribe to OSHA regulations on height and length. I like to make sure my railings are at least 4 feet tall and an additional foot for every 10 feet off the ground.
Building codes require that railings are set at a certain height and also have blockages below them so that you can't slip out from underneath them.
This is not a good look for Quark, Ben. Quark, up until now, has been depicted as sort of, better than your typical Ferengi in a number of ways, but also just as subject to, like, the greed element of Ferengi that we've come to know. Mm-hmm. But this is, like, some dark shit. Like, this is, like, trafficking in nuclear material. This is something that I didn't think that he would be into, but I guess it just goes to show that he's as out for the buck as any other Ferengi.
One of the interesting things about his character that they really, I will be interested to see if this ever gets dialed in as such. Cause like, on the one hand, he's kind of like a moral character that can be counted on to do the right thing when the chips are down, in like episodes where he's on the same side as everybody.
Right.
But then he's like, oh yeah, like a guy wants me to hire some killers. Cool. Into it.
Yeah. Like, why isn't Quark in jail at the end of this episode? Like, he should be in prison. There are rules against trafficking in hazardous material, right?
Should be.
Is this a post hazardous material punishment environment here?
You know, like, the provisional government is passing a lot of laws, but they just haven't gotten to that part of the code section.
Sure.
Kajata is, like, stuck in six bay for the rest of this episode. She's in like, a super bio bed in really bad shape. And Quark and the mercenaries head down to steal a runabout, which they're expecting to meet Vantika at. And Quark gets the door open, and there is Bashir. Surprise, surprise, he's Vantika.
I've been expecting you.
We know he's Vantika because Bashir is lit from below. And you and I both know this, Ben, but like, whenever you light an actor from below, you're implementing a technique for bad guys. Like, yeah. Low light is especially unflattering. It also makes people look evil.
Yep.
It's the whole flashlight under the chin telling a campfire story situation. And Siddig bounces from low light to low light throughout this ship. Like, he finds the light that illuminates him in this way.
Yeah, it's really remarkable in a world where there are lots of lit up panels that people have to sit at that they don't get lit from below more often.
Right. Yeah.
So Dax wanders down to Six Bay to keep chatting science with her buddy Julian and discovers his comm badge has been left there. A lot of the planks of this caper are starting to converge. Odo catches Lieutenant Toast.
Lieutenant George Primman, Starfleet Security.
Hold it! Toast Man!
Down somewhere doing tricorder, and Lieutenant Toast is like, "Hey man, I actually did learn something from you. I've been going through like secondary non-secure systems, and I found this Giga like latched on to the something-something system."
Another subspace crossover shunt, just like the one Vantika used when he tapped into the computer.
It's like a dongle that could have knocked out the station's primary functions for an hour, which would have been plenty of time for Vantika to escape with the Duridium freighter that's coming through the wormhole.
Odo's like, check out the big brains on Lieutenant Toast. Like, it's totally next level thinking, because Odo is messing around in parts of the station that he feels like could be threatened, and if they were damaged could like do some real shit. But Toast is down there like looking at like the sewer system, like really secondary and tertiary systems that most people wouldn't consider to be like targetable.
Yeah. These mercenaries like break onto this freighter, and it's kind of an interesting, like, it's a fully realized bridge set that we get to see here. Like, it is really cool to see a civilian ship that is in the Federation. You know, it's got the same like Elkar's computer systems, but it's a lot more cramped. It's a lot darker. The lighting is less even.
Yeah, it looks like a different model of car from the same car maker,
mm-hmm.
in a weird way, and not like the difference between a Cadillac and a Peugeot.
Right. Yeah, it's cool. We get some, you know, lethargic Star Trek phaser combat here. Like they're just kind of walking around bullseyeing the crew of this ship. Like, one guy, like, literally just walks out from behind a corner and is like, "What's going on in here, guys?" Oh!
I love that guy.
If I didn't have a better Shimoda, that guy would be my Shimoda.
Right. This idea that Vantika hid a mental ejection seat under his own fingernail and then, you know, scraped it onto Bashir's neck to hop into his brains is sort of turned the "make me live" line into a hope instead of a demand. Like, it totally changes the context of that initial scene for me in kind of a great way.
It's like do you think it was like the voice command for the little brain pattern generator to work?
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think of it like that. It seemed to me as sort of a hope.
Yeah. I think that the script of this episode is actually pretty cool. Like, there's some problems with it. Like, I wouldn't argue that, but I would say that, like, mostly this falls apart in execution rather than in premise.
Oh, yeah. Especially as we crash toward the conclusion. So, all of the disabilities that Bashir as Vantika thought he had visited upon the station have not worked. One of them being the tractor beam. So the station's got the ship in a tractor beam, and Bashir is Vantika is like,
"Engage engines, full impulse.
We're not going anywhere with a tractor beam on us.
Do it.
Keep the pedal on the floor so we aren't..."
It's more like, "Keep the pedal on the floor.
Right.
This shit is so insane, the way he speaks.
Yeah, it's not great. And so the idea is he's using his body as a hostage that he doesn't think Sisko is going to put in danger. He's like, look, man, you don't want me to hurt Bashir, and you could easily destroy the ship if we decide to go to warp right now. So maybe you should release the tractor beam, let us go, and I'll drop off this body down the road somewhere. What I really wanted out of this scene, Ben, was one of the classic hold a phaser up to my own head scenes.
Yeah.
That to me would have been far crazier. Give me some of that.
Yeah, I think that there's like a little bit of a mechanical problem, which is that, you know, they've got this ship and this valuable thing, and they don't want to, they also don't want to lose the valuable thing.
And if the ship is exploded with the Dridium in it, it's really bad for the galaxy too. Like, yeah, that's part of it too. I guess that's a bigger threat than Bashir blowing his brains out.
It's a humanitarian crisis, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like it does sort of limp across the finish line.
Yeah.
As an episode, and it's like the tension could have been higher and more interesting if it had just, you know, been kind of restructured a bit.
Yeah, the solution ends up being like in the minute that the station is given to release them from the tractor beam, Dax comes up with a way to shoot a beam through the tractor beam that can like sort of short circuit the spell that Bashir's under. So they shoot the beam and the spell is lifted on Bashir long enough for them to beam Bashir back to the station. So Bashir's like, hey guys, it's me again. It's definitely not Vantika. Except it is Vantika. And so Sisko just fucking phasers him. Phasers him to the ground. And this is a scene where I was expecting like the camera to shoot all of the women at ops, like doing one of those slow claps that gets louder and louder. Because the women have got to love this, right?
Yeah. Thank fuck that guy. Ugh.
Gold Dukat. Dukat. Gold Dukat. So
Bashir is Vantika is disabled long enough to bring him to Six Bay, where they beam out the bad shit from his brains, and they put that into the little ashtray that can contain all of Vantika's thoughts. An ashtray that Taika Jada then just phasers unceremoniously like a minute later. It's great.
Yeah. This is another thing where it's like, I think that like you need to wait till you're not in their jurisdiction to do the like corporal punishment.
They give Vantika the Moriarty treatment, except they take it one step further by actually blowing up the holodeck simulation. It's pretty rugged.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, did you like this episode?
This is the kind of episode that shows so much potential.
Yeah.
And I think that you get to see a lot of potential in a lot of the characters in this show, in this episode. It's like, it's one of those early season episodes where you're starting to like see the writers figure some things out, figure some thing, like some kinds of fun adventures to put these characters through, but they definitely do not have it like totally figured out yet. And that's pretty interesting. So I would say that from a standpoint of like getting to see it kind of come together as a show, this seems to be this is a fun one for me. But you know, like in a vacuum, I think it's kind of a failed episode.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with the second part. It's a mystery episode with no mystery. Like, that they didn't trust the viewer enough to withhold information at that 10-minute mark long enough to let the mystery, you know, bed itself.
Yeah.
Totally took all of the fun out of it for me. Like, that reveal on the runabout could have been amazing, but it was so obvious from the start. Like, trust me to be in suspense. And
it also,
it felt very lowest common denominator to me as a mystery.
I mean, the other way you could go with it is just make Bashir be playing both things, but like have that make us trust him less as a character. Like when we were talking earlier about what a smarmy asswipe he is at the beginning of the episode, like I think there could be something intentional about that. Like what if we dig one of our characters a deep hole to climb out of,
right,
in this show? Like that would be kind of a fun like writing challenge. And like maybe that's what they're doing. I don't really know, but you can do that within an episode too. Like make a character that you like be scary and untrustworthy, and then dig yourself out of that hole.
When Bashir as Vantika shoves Kajada over the railing, she should have died.
Yeah.
I think if you make Bashir kill someone while under the spell, the possibilities for his character get really interesting to me. Because instead of the slide whistle ending of, oh, my head, like I've got this great big headache after taking this murderer out of me, like, you take the fun out of it and instead saddle him with, like, he goes from someone who in the very first scene is that cocksure doctor who saves lives without even trying. He's just a natural healer. You suddenly give him some darkness. That's some real colorful character work there that I would really appreciate. It would help me appreciate Bashir as a character even more. A lot more than I do right now, which is to say, I don't. Like, give him some darkness. Darkness that isn't like creepo darkness that what we've gotten before.
And Vantika is supposed to be this terrifying killer. Like,
yeah, kill some people.
Show me that.
You know what? Like, Bashir could kill people and we would forgive him if he were under the spell. Like, and I think they should have gone that far.
Kill Quark while you're at it.
You know what? Like, you make Bashir kill Ty Kajada and then you stick the Vantika ashtray in Bashir's office forever, like where he's got to stare at it.
Yeah.
Like, that's some heavy shit going forward. Like the reminder.
Have him kill Lieutenant Toast too.
Lieutenant George Primman, Starfleet Security.
Hold it, Toast Man!
Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't
need to. Let's do some killing.
It is time to do some killing on this show, Ben. You're exactly right.
Well, the other thing it's time for, Adam, is our beloved Priority One segment. Shall we see what we've got in the queue?
Show me what's in the box, Ben.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first Priority One message is of a commercial nature. It goes like this. Ever wondered how the Garakian midwife toad got its name? How a 3,000-ton screech rhino moves? How the eel bird of Regulus V courts its mates? In the webcomic Space Otters, naturalist Octavio Briswold and Leonard Fitzmyrtle travel through the pre-Federation galaxy discovering strange new animals and occasionally eating them. With beautiful Autobahn-style illustrations and rakish prose, Space Otters brings the animals of Star Trek to life. Visit spaceotters.com to join the adventure.
You know, rakish prose is my favorite kind, Ben. I'm excited to check this out.
Do like a nice rakish prose.
Are the Space Otters making space dams? Tell me more about that.
I'm looking at this website. It's really cool. It's like field notes with paintings of the creatures.
I like that.
In style, it's a very like original and cool idea.
Very cool.
Really beautiful paintings too.
Yeah, go to spaceotters.com. To join the adventure.
I gotta scroll through this and figure out if that weird creature that Alexander saved from the biolab is in here.
I wonder if the Lulululu alien's in it. Ben, our second Priority One message is from Melissa. It is for Dennis. It goes like this. Happy birthday! Can you believe only 10 years ago we were just two drunk Shimodas who met at Oktoberfest? Everyone knows that busting out your TNG episode guide isn't a great way to win over a girl. But what my theory presupposes is Maybe it was. Thank you for being a great dad to baby Jay, the girl. I love you as much as Riker loves consent. Hey, that's great. Happy birthday, Dennis.
Oh, man.
Melissa loves you so much.
Seriously.
Well, if you would love to send a Priority One message, couldn't be easier. You can just go over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. If the window is open for those purchases, they can't make it any easier than that. Fill out a quick form, slap down a $100 bill for a personal message and a $200 bill for a commercial message, and we'll read either of those live on tape on one of our great, greatest gen shows. And they really help us keep the production going on our podcasts.
They sure do. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Sure did, Ben. It's Cisco for shooting Bashir at Ops. Like, no one could have taken... Well, actually, there is someone who could have taken more joy than Cisco. It would have been if Dax did it. Why didn't Dax shoot him?
Or
that would
Kira.
Have been a great idea. Yeah, Dax, or like both of them. Yeah, they could have crossed the streams on Bashir's face, like blowing up Remick's head in Conspiracy. That would have been awesome. That would have been great. Bashir lasts 8 episodes. They're like scrubbing out the transporter in a house for like weeks after that. Hey, welcome back, O'Brien. We got a mess for you to clean up.
Remember cleaning up transporter pads? Well, it's back on the menu, boy.
Gross. What about you, Ben?
My Shimoda is Ty, the police lady. When she goes down to confront Odo about the fact that she's been locked out of the security system or whatever, she kind of storms off in a huff, and she tries to like storm out the door, and you can see that the actress had no idea where to go once she got through the doors.
Oh.
in that shot. If you go to 26 minutes and about 10 seconds in the episode, you can see her kind of like storm out and then like turn around in the hallway.
Oh man, she totally pirouettes in the hallway,
looking a little unsure of what to do next. And it just really made me laugh that they, you know, like you could go straight, you could take a hard left, take a hard right, any one of them would have looked good. They didn't decide. So for that, she gets my drunk Shimoda.
Good spot. That's one of those deep spot Shimodas.
Damok Angelad Tanagra. Damok Angelad Tanagra.
The Netflix capsule for the next episode, Ben, is Commander Sisko in dress uniform prepares to receive the first formal alien delegation from the Gamma Quadrant.
Like, somebody watched the first scene of the episode.
How insane is that?
The description on Amazon is, Quark's attempt at deception toward a newly encountered alien race places the space station's senior officers in a labyrinth of danger.
Way to try with that one. Way to watch the entire episode.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's really funny.
Ben, this is Move Along Home. This is one of the episodes that people told us on the internet was historically bad.
Yeah, it's not just cited as the worst episode of Deep Space Nine. It is often in the like worst episodes of Trek ever list.
That's very attractive to me for some reason. Really curious to see what that looks like. You want to see if we have to drink during?
Let's see if we have to drink during. A lot of people have suggested modifications to our randomness, our random drunkenness mechanic. And what I'm going to say is I think we've pretty much settled on a mechanic. But thank you. And our random number for this episode is 13, Adam. So we will not be getting shithouse drunk, unfortunately.
Dodged a bullet.
Move Along Home.
Okay.
I mean, unless we want to.
Let's leave our viewers in suspense. We shall see.
Well, that'll be next episode, and in the meantime, we'd love to chat with you online. There's a great Facebook group for Greatest Gen. There's a Reddit sub for Greatest Gen. There's also a great Maximum Fun subreddit. And we use the hashtag Greatest Gen on Twitter, where Adam is at Cut for Time, and I am at Benjamin R, A-H-R. And, you know, it's not just a fun place to chat with folks from the community. Like, every one of those social media things, like, people are making amazing drawings and artwork and, like, posing headcanon questions and... It's a real heap of fun. If you're into this show, you're definitely going to be into these communities.
Great place to meet someone for a potentially long-term relationship.
Yeah, it's a dating service first and foremost. if you enjoy this program and what we're doing here, we rely very heavily on the support of our listeners. People go to MaximumFun.org/donate and contribute financially to the production of this show. It wouldn't exist without that, and we really appreciate everyone who does it. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for a lot of the other music here on the show, and also a lot of the theme music now.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that looks a little bit like Ben Stiller in the movie Dodgeball.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.